welcome back to No Country for Us. This will be, I want to say, like, we're just coming back from break, you know.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Just getting back to swing things, next episode of the podcast. Today, we're talking about cinema. Okay,
yes, we are.
Evolution of cinema. I am joined by the great Angelina Blackwell.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
She is part of the local theater department and the head of film club. What's up?
Not much. Gonna go to a film club meeting after this, actually, so I'm very excited.
That is correct. All right. So, talking about cinema, you know, the Oscar nominations have just been released.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Some of them we are both happy about. Some of them we are not happy about.
Bit questionable.
Yeah, bit questionable. Couple wonder what the Academy is exactly doing this year.
You usually always have to wonder what they're doing every year.
Yes, exactly. But it got me thinking about cinema and how it's evolved over the years.
Did it?
Yes, because, you know, I watch a lot of old films and I've, you know, comparing them to modern day cinema, it seems like the focus and the way they're made and the themes that are developed in those old movies just seem a lot different than they are now.
Yeah, I would say, like, as our progression with technology and just the films in general, just how they look, definitely, I think, grew more complex as just the films themselves grew more complex.
Exactly. Like, in my mind, I like to think of it as two eras. There's everything before the 70s, and then the 70s were kind of the progression to the modern day, at least in my mind, because when I think of what was black and white movies, you know, all the way up to around, like, the release date of The Godfather, it was, like, very bleak movies that didn't worry about happy endings and...
Well, so. I would say yes, but also because generations have also changed. We've grown more to like the happy ending and to want the happy ending. And we've also grown more to expressing our opinion very much. Like, obviously, that's why, like, we're doing a podcast, because we want to express our opinion. But the opinions have become just so very important to people making the films and people who are judging the films that it, like, runs kind of Hollywood almost, and it kind of runs how we make our films nowadays rather than it did back then.
Yeah, exactly. Older generations, you know, had the draft, they were in the middle of wars and stuff, probably created some more depressing content that was being released through the movie studios.
Yeah, I would just also say they'd have more rules. People were scared to push the boundaries. Mm-hmm. Obviously, like, now we're not scared with really any art form to press any boundaries. We like to really push the envelope with a lot of different types of media, film being one of them, obviously. And then back then, it was less hard to offend anybody, and it was more difficult to push the envelope, I'd say.
Exactly. I mean, even with Psycho, people still have a problem with Psycho today, and that movie's, like, what, 60 years old at this point?
Yeah, it's very confusing. As for me, I don't understand why people would consider it, like, even rated R, or how some people would consider it, like hurtful to them in any way. Yeah. I don't know. I guess that's, I just don't understand that.
Yeah, I don't either. So, getting, I guess, into the more technical side of, you know, old cinema. So, yeah. Just some background on old cinema. Let me pull this up real quick.
Are you going back to, like, the Great Train Robbery, or, like, before that?
So I'm talking about stuff like the silent era and, like, stuff like... So silent reels existed as early as 1907.
Yes. Okay. It started with the pictures turning into...
Yes. Yeah. In fact, to begin with, even though silent reels existed as early as 1907, the illusion of motion picture was actually in existence even before that. It started with Thomas Edison trying to come up with visuals for his recently released phonograph.
Yeah, there was things that technically you could consider film. Maybe they were, like, 4-second, like, pictures that were just put together. There was, like, women dancing. I've seen a few that are just very small.
I think the most popular one is that horse, the guy riding the horse.
Yeah, the guy riding the horse.
It's on that spinning wheel.
Mm-hmm. But so it's the same thing over and over again. It's not the most interesting film.
Exactly. And then when going back, fast forwarding again to 1907, you had the silent reels, you know, finally people putting, you know, getting close to mastering actual videography.
Yeah.
And then to accompany it, though, when they were trying to figure out what to do with sound, they some theaters would hire silent orchestras. Or not silent orchestras, orchestras to play along with the silent
You know the
reel.
Orchestras that just don't make any noise?
Exactly. I think it's this one.
Excellent.
I think I've done that every episode. It's become a tradition.
We'll try and do it one more time. We'll see if we can push it.
Yes, and then Warner Brothers was actually the first one to actually adopt using sound in all of their feature films.
Yeah, which makes sense. They've been around for so long.
Yeah, I think they're one of the oldest studios at this point, correct?
Yeah.
And then color pretty soon became a thing.
Yeah.
At first, I didn't realize this when I was doing research for this episode, but color films, they weren't in the sense of, like, color as we think of it, as in, like, you know, skin color and, like, clothes and the sky is blue and, you know, the yellow brick road that Dorothy walks on.
Yeah.
It wasn't like that. In fact, color films were more based on, they were monochrome. So, you know, and it was, the color was chosen to match the mood of the specific scene. So you would have an all blue scene to match a sad scene, but yeah, it would be in all different shades, mm-hmm, so that you could see the characters, but it'd be very monochrome. And then obviously, you know, we got better at, you know, coloring, yeah, them, and producing Technicolor arose, mm-hmm, and now we're here with actual color capturing capabilities. Now that's the technical, yeah, side of things. Today I wanted to worry about the actual, and we, you know, we started discussing at the beginning, but the actual plot themes in movies, mm-hmm, so stuff like The Third Man, The Stranger, you know,
so like old
Citizen
school,
Kane,
yeah,
and then all the way up to now,
mm-hmm.
So I had a question for you, actually.
It I was will answer it.
So how do you think they've evolved?
I mean, just basics. Like, you could go into, you know, they've evolved with, you know, the technical side. They've evolved with acting skills, mm-hmm, basically. People, right, have gone way more in depth. They've, like, trained for years, or they're just naturally good at it. People are getting more help than I think they did before. You wouldn't have as many people on a film, I'd say, like 1950, rather than you do now. There's, mm-hmm, so many credits, and there's so many people that can help out the writers. And obviously there's, like, applause to the director for creating the whole film, but the director has gotten help from over the thousands of films that they've probably seen in their lifetime, and then their, like, crew and, like, their entire. So I think there's just a lot more going into it,
mm-hmm,
which created the evolution. And it's gone at a slow pace. Obviously, there have been great films throughout the entire process, but I think there's still room to, like, evolve and get better, I guess. I don't think there's ever going to be the perfect film.
Yeah, definitely. We definitely have bigger budgets now.
Yeah, duh. we're not using an actual train for the train robbery.
Yeah, exactly. Do you think films have become more abstract?
Abstract as in, like, complex or more in-depth?
Well, because now, you know, I feel like the most abstract cinema, at least that I've seen of, like, classic cinema, is stuff like, you know, like The Twilight Zone. It was just weird and stuff. Maybe, yeah, you can maybe make an argument for it. You ever heard of The Man Who Laughs?
The Man Who Laughs? No, I have not seen
it. It's
the
what
Who
The
Laughs.
Joker was actually based on. But,
interesting,
like, I think you could technically consider that abstract, but not really. Because,
mm-hmm,
you know, nowadays we have movies like, you know, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind dealing with abstract concepts.
Yeah.
We have, if you know the show, Black Mirror.
Black Mirror is phenomenal.
It is. But it's like, it's hard to comprehend what they're actually talking about, but, yeah, people love this stuff. What do you think brought about this?
I mean, I think it's a phenomenal concept. It's definitely, like, my favorite kind of film. I enjoy watching it most because I think it just brings on, like, deep thinking, and I think that's what a lot of filmmakers want to do, and I think that's what they try to do, especially just because we've come to the time where we want to be, for lack of a better word, woke, and people want to know more, and they want to think deeper, and they want to do this and that, and they, like, with films, obviously they're gonna do what the audiences, you know, want. They're gonna like kind of play into the audiences a little bit. And so I think maybe that's why like a lot of filmmakers are trying to make these abstract concepts so it's different and people can think and they can talk. And I don't know. I think it's definitely a lot of like the people have an effect.
Do you think that some of the older directors have become dated because of that?
I wouldn't say dated. I mean, I think directors have very, very creative minds and they do a lot of work and they create fantastic stories. But I just think that like the newer directors are coming in with these concepts and they like know the generation. They know how people work nowadays and what people want more than old directors do, because naturally older people want tradition and they're going to stay more conservative, especially when they're older. So they're going to stick to their ideas. They're not always necessarily going to like go out of bounds,
right?
I guess, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, the reason I bring that up is because, I mean, recently at the Golden Globe, well, this wasn't at the Golden Globes, but Ricky Gervais pointed out at the Golden Globes, Martin Scorsese had said that Marvel cinema wasn't like actual cinema.
Yeah,
and which was which is a highly controversial thing to say. However, that's why I was asking, do you think some of these other directors have become dated? Because the release of these superhero movies and these movies about gods is a relatively new concept that's actually being explored.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, that could definitely, like, that would help, like, what I was saying. Like, Martin Scorsese, he is stuck on his, you know, mobster, gangster families. He loves, like, guns and blood and men and stuff like that. So he has his way and he does excellent with what he has. He's always, I think, produced very famous and good films. But you know, the fact that he doesn't like Marvel is just kind of showing to, you know, maybe like these younger directors have better and more interesting ideas that more people are like looking at. Because Marvel is a huge franchise. If you ask a random kid on the street.
Well, especially now that it's connected to Disney and.
Oh, God. Yeah. It's going to just rise from there. Yeah. But like if you went up and you asked a 12-year-old on the street, hey, do you know Taxi Driver? Most likely they're going to say no. If you say, hey, do you know Doctor Strange? They're going to be like, heck yeah, I do. So like, it's just a matter of like, how can you play into the audience? Because audiences and people just matter so much.
Do you think that could be actually cause a problem though? Because we definitely don't want our directors, you know, like fan feeding us basically. We don't want them creating movies just for the sake of the audience. We also want it to still be a legitimate art form.
Yeah.
You know, we want them to speak their mind, not just speak ours.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, like, I totally understand what you're saying. It's just film is one of those things, just because it's involving actors and people in Hollywood, that can just be more controversial than, you know, say you make a controversial art piece, then the art piece is yours. You are okay with taking the criticism. But everyone who's involved in this really, really hard-hitting topic of a movie might not want that recognition. If you see your favorite actress in a movie about something that you're very against, or she's working with someone that you're very against, then you like she's gonna like pay for that. She's gonna get the like short end of the stick. So I just think it's harder to like do to like not like fall into that, oh, I want to please the fans.
Right. So do you think that certain things need to be censored then?
I personally would prefer to see, I like to be uncomfortable when I watch films. I like to see the stuff that I don't get to see. There's a lot of films that have done that. Beasts of No Nation, Blood Diamonds. They've talked about the children in Africa and like children armies. That makes you so, so uncomfortable, but it's not here. You can't see that every day. So stuff like that is what I think needs to be in films. And I'm not saying like, obviously what turns people away naturally is sex and violence. Those are the two main things people are like, I'm not going to go see that. I don't think you need to incorporate sex and violence in every single movie.
Well, obviously, yeah.
Yeah, but it needs to be there because it's real life. Yeah. And that's what movies should be showing.
Yeah, and it tends to be, you know, even though they show violence and sex and stuff, a lot of times it just tends to be another way of providing social commentary.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. The movie Cannibal Holocaust is one of the the most censored movies, and still it gets an NC-17 rating, even yeah. with the amount of stuff they took out of the film. But the movie isn't necessarily violence for violence sake or sex for sex sake. It's literally just I can't remember what it is specifically, but it's a commentary. It's a social commentary, mm-hmm. I think, about corporations,
yeah,
and unethical treatment of like outsourcing workers and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was brought out by this film crew that goes to this country and is trying to create a documentary, but they fake everything at the expense of the local villagers, mm-hmm. and they end up paying the price for it, obviously.
Yeah,
but yeah, and actually that. That brings me to another thing about censorship is this is so weird. I actually had a theory about 1980s slasher films.
Well, I would love to hear it.
So, because I had like Psycho in my mind and I was like,
yeah.
Yeah. So I had this theory and I kind of talked to it about it with Miss Solzner.
Mm-hmm.
And she, I don't know. Wait, was it Miss Solzner? No, it was actually Film Club.
Film Club.
Mm-hmm. And we were talking to Miss Hercules, but then it dawned on me, and I later brought it up to my mom, and she was like, oh, my God. But, you know, the whole idea that the kids that were doing wrong things that people would consider immoral in the films, like sneaking away, sex, stuff like that.
You know, getting out of the house at, like, 12 a.m.
Yeah, but they would always be punished for it
yeah.
by, you know, somebody like Jason or Freddy, mm-hmm. you know, but at the same time, it's a double entendre for okay. So I'm not trying to get controversial or anything, but like as a double entendre for religion and how they treat mm-hmm. other people. So represented by religion is this horrible monster that kills children. But at the same time, it's saying, you know, what they're teaching mm-hmm. to be immoral. And that was my whole theory, was that these movies like Freddy Krueger and like Nightmare on Elm Street and like Friday the 13th, it was just all a big metaphor for.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely an open, like it's open to interpretation always.
Right.
There's exactly. never, there's definitely wrong answers. I'm not saying like every person has a correct theory, but I think if you can be legitimate and if you can back up your statement, you use, you know, the horror movies. If you simply were like, I think horror movies, you know, relate to religion, that might right. be a little bit more controversial, but you have a theory and you have like examples. I think it's interesting, and I love Nightmare on Elm Street. That's right. one of my favorite old horror movies. So if I watched it again, I'd probably think of that and try and like incorporate it in some
right.
way.
Right. Well, the reason I bring that up is because I think horror movies are a perfect example of how cinema evolves. And actually, I feel like you can look at how cinema evolves through specifically horror movies.
Oh God, Midsommar, the one that came out most yeah. recently.
And the reason is because like back in the 40s and stuff, you had movies like Godzilla.
Yeah.
You know? But like it was obviously like 40s, 50s, it was like Godzilla, you know, King Kong, but it was obvious a representation for other something world bigger. Superpowers, you know, like mm-hmm. like the Red Scare with communism or yeah. the Nazis, you know. And then in the 80s, like I brought out with the Nightmare on Elm Street thing in yeah. religion, you had back then a bunch of you had a big Christian backlash against like the heavy metal, the heavy metal bands and the rock bands of that yeah. day. And it was very, religion oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And then nowadays I can't even explain horror movies right now. Horror movies are in a very weird place in modern day. I think
people just, when I say push the envelope, like I did earlier, they really want to just try everything.
They do.
Especially because horror, this is something that makes me so angry. Horror is never recognized by the Academy. It's never recognized by a lot of award shows. When there's brilliant movies, Us, Jordan Peele, I think it was last year. The Babadook. Mm-hmm. Midsommar, like I said. It should have been nominated for the Oscars. I can think of two to three that they should have been nominated for and mm-hmm. weren't, simply because it's under the genre of horror.
Yeah, and there's several genres that the Academy doesn't realize or recognize that. Like, they don't, they rarely recognize comedies either.
No, they have the category, but that's even paired with musical, and sometimes musicals are simply just comedies with song, and that's like,
exactly.
They don't, there's like, pairing it with that, I feel like it should be two separate categories.
The only comedy that I can think of that the Oscars actually recognized was My Uncle Vinny with Joe Pesci.
I never watched that, but I have heard the name.
I didn't either. I did not watch it either.
like I forgot his name, who won for the Oscar. Not the Oscar, but this year he won some Academy Award, and he was in the Elton John film. He won for that.
The guy that was in, not Baby Driver, Kingsman.
Yeah.
I keep forgetting his name.
He won that, and he was, I'm sure he, I haven't seen the movie, but I'm sure he was phenomenal, especially for winning that. Yeah, Rocket Man.
He won Best Actor for Rocket Man?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, under, it was, the musical comedy category.
What?
Yeah, he was Best Actor for that. And, I mean, I guess, I don't know. I never watched the movie, so I don't really have an opinion on him or that film. But
yeah, I don't either. I didn't see Rocket Man.
Yeah, but I don't know. I just, there's a lot of things I think that go into. I'm sorry. I'm going on to the Oscars.
No, that. You're fine. Wherever you want to go.
I mean, yeah, there's a lot of things I think that are wrong about the Oscars. I mean, I do appreciate that they try to, honor films, but they're not necessarily honoring the ones people want, which, again, is why it's controversial. Yeah.
And many people feel that the superhero movie should actually receive a lot of the awards. And I agree and I disagree with this.
I would like to hear.
Okay, because I was listening to another podcast, the H3H3 podcast, and they were like, why are these films that nobody has seen being recognized? Like, they were mad that The Shape of Water received an Oscar. And I think The Shape of Water deserves an Oscar because I think it's an excellent film.
It is. It is phenomenal.
I think it's beautiful, actually. Like, yeah. The cinematography, the shots they got, and it's so good.
I've never watched a film where it, I feel, is poetry, yeah, almost, and that's definitely one of the films that, like, hits every check mark.
Yeah, I mean, granted, it's a little weird. But
it's definitely weird, yeah. But
that's not the issue here. the Academy recognize, and this is not to say that the Marvel movies or superhero movies in general aren't art, mm-hmm, but it recognizes the, I guess Marvel, in a sense, represents like a corporate side of films almost.
Yeah.
And the Academy is there to recognize the artists that are not corporate, I guess you could say. It recognizes independent film.
Yeah, and I think, personally, I think it should. Mm-hmm. Just because so many people just work so hard, mm-hmm, on these films. And if you've been with a franchise for, God, I don't even know how long the Marvel franchise has been around, but
forever.
Like, if you're making so much, they've broken so many box office records, Endgame, the one before that. I'm not a big Marvel guy, but I just think you've been recognized a lot, mm-hmm, and I'm not going to say it's selfish. I think that's a strong word, and I don't necessarily believe it's selfish. If you made an excellent movie and people love it, then yes, like, be proud. But right. I just think it is very, very important to recognize films that are different.
Right. So here's like a thing. Because nobody, it brought up an interesting point on the HD podcast that they were like, nobody has seen these films that the Oscars are nominating. And I was like, that brings up the interesting point of, do you think that that Marvel and DC kind of have like a monopoly almost on theaters on what people do go see? Because when I go see movies in theaters, I rarely go into a theater that's packed. The only time I go into a theater that's packed is when a Marvel movie gets released. The last couple movies I've seen maybe like 4 or 5 people in the theater, like, besides myself.
It shows bias, which is what a lot of people go into films with, which, if you are a movie buff or if you're really into movies, you'd need to go in with minimal or no bias. And people will, you know, they, some people hate going to the movies, and but they will leave their house because, oh, this new Marvel movie came out, and that just shows a little bit of bias, especially because Marvel has their comic books and their, like, you know, they've just been loved for so long, and so many people are into, you know, like that fantasy, like superhero world. And, you know, I think obviously receives a lot of recognition, but I think a lot of it stems from that bias that audiences have.
Right. All right. I think that wraps up another episode of No Country for Us. All right.
Very happy to be here. Thank you.
Sorry to cut it off short like that, but we are at 25 minutes.
Oh, my God. All right.
And
yeah.
My editor will not like that. All right. Thank you for joining us on No Country for Us. Next week, we'll be talking about, we'll think of something. Goodbye, everybody. And tune in next time. Thank you.